Olivia is a second-year doctoral student and instructor in the Oregon State University Public Health Program. She's also a research associate at Oregon Health and Science University in the Department of Pediatrics. She earned an MPH in Child and Adolescent Health from Johns Hopkins University and previously worked as a senior policy associate at Alterum Institute in Washington, D.C. So I'll invite Olivia to come up to the podium. Hopefully, I thought this was blinking. Hopefully, it'll go all right. So page down to move forward.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. This project is about educational services received among U.S. children with developmental conditions. I'd like to start off by acknowledging my co-authors, Brianna Sinche and Dr. Catherine Zuckerman, who are both at the Oregon Health and Science University. They don't have any relationships to disclose. Prevalence of developmental conditions such as autism spectrum disorder and intellectual disability among U.S. children has increased markedly in the past several decades. Recent research shows that as many as 1 in 50 school-aged children have autism in the U.S. Developmental conditions are typically diagnosed in early childhood before or around the time children begin school. And many children with developmental conditions experience impairments necessitating the use of specialized services. Because of this, most children who are diagnosed with developmental conditions should qualify for special education services under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA. And once children do become eligible for special education services, an individualized education program, or IEP, is developed to help meet their needs. However, recent research shows that 1 in 10 children who are school-aged with autism do not have an IEP. Ease of access to the community-based services that children with developmental conditions need, such as special education and early intervention services, may improve education services receipt for this child subpopulation. With that in mind, with this project, we wanted to determine the relationship between ease of access to needed community-based services and educational services receipt among U.S. school-aged children with developmental conditions. And then we also wanted to identify variation in educational services receipt according to sociodemographic and need factors among U.S. school-aged children with developmental conditions. To do this, we used data from the 2009-10 National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs, which we linked to the 2011 Survey of Pathways to Diagnosis and Services, which I'll just be calling Pathways. So Pathways was a follow-back survey to the 09-10 survey, and it followed children who had ever been diagnosed with autism, developmental delay, and/or intellectual disability from the 09-10 survey. The children also had to be 6 to 17 years old when Pathways was administered in 2011, and the same parent had to be available to report data on the child in Pathways. Another thing about Pathways is that it was only administered in English, so parents had to be able to answer the survey in English. For those of you who might not be familiar with the 09-10 survey, it is a national probability survey that's sponsored by the Maternal and Child Health Bureau, and it's administered through the National Center for Health Statistics, which is part of the CDC. So our study sample from these linked data sets included 3,518 children who were 6 to 17 years old and currently had developmental delay, intellectual disability, and/or ASD. To assess educational services receipt, we used three measures from Pathways. The first was whether or not the child currently had an IEP. If they did have an IEP, whether or not that IEP addressed their parents' concerns about the child's development and education, and if the child received one or more of four school-based therapy services once or more per week. The therapy services asked about in Pathways were speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and social skills training. And we chose the one or more cutoff based on the central tendency, the mean and median of how many school-based therapies children in the study sample received. And then to assess ease of access, we used an 0910 composite measure, which was comprised of seven items about parent experiences accessing all the types of services children may need or use in home, school, and healthcare settings during the past 12 months. And so, as you can see, that's a very broad kind of measure. So the specific items, the first item was an ordinal item about how often the parent was frustrated getting services for the child. The parent rated that item on a 4-point scale from never to always. And then there were six binary items where the parent answered yes, no about experiencing the following difficulties accessing services the child needed. So things like the child being ineligible for services, issues related to costs, and the availability of services in the family's area. So to have easily accessed services according to this measure, the parent had to say they were never or sometimes frustrated getting services, and they did not experience any of the difficulties asked about in accessing services the child needed. And then our sociodemographic and need factors are listed here. We selected them based on past child health services research related to this topic. The sociodemographic factors are pretty standard. The need factors included the type of developmental condition children had, whether or not they had functional limitations, which we measured according to the Children with Special Health Care Needs Screener, whether or not they received early intervention before age 3, and whether or not the parent needed help coordinating the child's care. And most of these factors were measured in the 0910 survey. Our analyses included descriptive statistics, chi-square tests, simple logistic regression models, and then we adjusted our logistic regression models for the sociodemographic and need factors. We performed all of the analyses in Stata and weighted them using the survey weights provided by the National Center for Health Statistics. Our sample represented an estimated 1,803,112,000 U.S. children who were 6 to 17 and had ASD, DD, and/or ID. Consistent with some of our past research on the sociodemographic characteristics of U.S. children with autism, most of the children in our sample were male, white, non-Hispanic, had private health insurance, had one or more parent with more than a high school education, and had two biological or adoptive parents. This bar chart shows you the percentage of children in the sample overall who were able to easily access services, as well as the percentage of children within each developmental condition subgroup that were able to easily access services. And so you can see overall, only about half of children in the study sample were able to easily access services they needed. And there was variation according to the developmental condition they had. So children with developmental delay were most likely to be able to easily access services compared to children with ASD who were least likely to be able to easily access services. And then this next chart shows you the percentage of the study sample overall, and then within each developmental condition subgroup that received educational services according to those three measures we used. If you look overall at that first dark blue bar, you can see that almost 20% of children did not have an IEP, which we were somewhat surprised by. And among those children that had an IEP, about 70% of them had an IEP that addressed parent concerns. And then among the whole study sample, only 2/3 were routinely receiving one or more school-based therapy. You can also see that there is a pattern in the variation by developmental conditions. So children with developmental delay across the measures were least likely to receive educational services compared to children with intellectual disability alone or with developmental delay. One thing I forgot to mention is that analytically we couldn't separate out the children who only had intellectual disability because there were only about 6 of them in the study sample. So they either had ID alone or they had ID with developmental delay. This table shows you the adjusted odds ratios of each of the educational service receipt measures. So if you look at the first row, it's showing you the adjusted odds of having each of the educational services if you were able to easily access services compared to if you were unable to easily access services. And so the main finding here is that overall and among children with DD and ASD, if parents were able to easily access services the child needed, they had higher adjusted odds of having an IEP that addressed parent concerns. We also saw that among children with DD, those who were able to easily access services had higher adjusted odds of having an IEP than those who were unable to easily access services. This table shows you the adjusted odds ratios of the educational services according to the sociodemographic factors. And so you can see that children who were younger, who were Hispanic, who had public health insurance only, and who had a parent with a high school education or less, were more likely to receive one or more of the school-based therapies compared to the referent group for that sociodemographic factor. And if you look over at the IEP column, you can see that there's also this effect of being Hispanic on having an IEP. So if you're Hispanic, you have higher adjusted odds of having an IEP. So we were kind of surprised by this finding and this finding here. We would have actually expected the opposite, but we think the reason that this finding emerged is because only English-speaking Hispanic families were surveyed. And so if we would have surveyed, or if we would have had Spanish-speaking families in the sample as well, we would have seen a different pattern of results. Okay, I had originally made this as a PowerPoint where these boxes were animated, but this is the PDF, so I'm just going to go through each of these colored boxes. So this, again, shows you the adjusted odds ratios of each of the educational services according to the different need factors. So if you look at this orange rectangular box, what we saw is that if children received early intervention, they had higher adjusted odds of each of the educational services, which we thought was a good thing. That's how we would like to see the system of care working for children with developmental conditions. And then if you look at this red box, you can see that children with more complex conditions and functional limitations had higher adjusted odds of having one or more school-based therapy. And then if you look down here at this yellow box, you can see that if the parent needed care coordination, the child had lower odds of having an IEP that addressed parent concerns. And we also saw that relationship between functional limitations and having an IEP that addressed parent concerns. In conclusion, nationwide we found that children with developmental conditions lacked ease of access to services and educational services received. We also found that ease of access was significantly positively associated with children having an IEP that addressed parent concerns, but not necessarily having an IEP or receiving school-based therapy routinely. And then these are the findings that I just described about the sociodemographic characteristics and need factors. We do have a number of limitations to our study. It is observational. We do think, however, that it would be hard to design an experimental study on these topics because the services are mandated under federal legislation for children who have these conditions. We also recognize that the ease of access measure is broad, and we can't really disentangle what specific services families were having difficulty accessing, and that limits the kind of inference we can make. In addition, the data are all parent reported, so there may be some measurement error, and a lot of the questions ask about experiences over the past 12 months, and so recall bias can also be an issue. It's also important to point out that the 0910 survey did have a low response rate, which could limit the generalizability of our findings. Nevertheless, we think that there are some important implications for practice and policy from these findings. First, that wider spread adaptation of promising comprehensive care delivery models tailored to children with developmental conditions could increase their ability to access and receive the services they need in school and healthcare settings. And so those are two programs we think if they were adapted specifically for this population of children, could have promising effects. And then there is some recently introduced legislation by Congress, which I bulleted out here, that's intended to improve the quality of the workforce in the education and healthcare settings, providing services to children and families with autism. And we think that's good, but we think it would be even better if that legislation would be expanded to include all children with developmental conditions, given the findings from this study. So that's another potential policy implication. Thank you.